Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 677, Update on Global Fascism. This program is being recorded on June 20th of the year 2009. We're going to plunge right back into the subject material just as we were looking at the mainstreaming of Austrian fascism in the last article that we looked at. We're going to take a look now at the mainstreaming of Italian fascism as well. This from The Independent, a British paper of March 20th of 2009. This article by Peter Popham is titled, The March of Mussolini into Italy's Mainstream, and it reads, The flames are going out all over Italy. Tomorrow, the flame which for more than 60 years has been the symbol of neo-fascist continuity with Mussolini will disappear from mainstream politics. The National Alliance, the last important home of that inheritance, is fusing, unquote, with Silvio Berlusconi's People of Freedom Party in order to give the governing bloc a single identity and a single unchallenged leader. The change has been a long time coming, 15 years and more. Mr. Berlusconi broke the great taboo of Italian post-war politics after he won his first general election victory in 1994 and incorporating four members of the National Alliance into his coalition. By the way, the National Alliance is also the name of a top American neo-Nazi group. Generally, in the literature and in the For the Record archives, I talk about the Alleanza Nazionale. That's the Italian conjugation or the Italian translation of National Alliance. Continuing. Embracing the fascists and neo-fascists was taboo for good reason. For one thing, their return after they had led the nation to ruin in the war was banned by the new Constitution, whose Article 139 states, quote, The reorganization under whatever form of the dissolved fascist party is forbidden, unquote. That veto had been honored in the breach rather than the observance since 1946 when Giorgio Almirante, the leader of the Italian social movement, picked up the baton of Mussolini where he had left it at his death and led the new party into parliament. But the neo-fascists remained in parliamentary limbo far from power. Berlusconi blew that inhibition away. Under the wily leadership of Gianfranco Fini, the post-fascists, unquote, have been gaining ground ever since. Tall, bespectacled, buttoned up, the opposite of Berlusconi in every way, the alliance's leader impressed the Eurocrats with his democratic credentials when he was brought in to lend a hand at drafting the EU's new constitution. He leaned over backwards to break his party's connection to anti-Semitism, paying repeated official visits to Israel where he was photographed in a skullcap at the Wailing Wall. On one visit in 2003, he went so far as to condemn Mussolini and the race laws passed in 1938, which barred Jews from school and resulted in thousands being deported to the death camps. I've certainly changed my ideas about Mussolini, he said at the time, and to condemn the race laws means to take responsibility for them, unquote. Statesmanlike, the word stuck to him like lint. Party hardliners such as Alessandra Mussolini, the glamorous granddaughter of Il Duce, were furious and split away to form fascist micro-parties of their own. But Mr. Fini's strategy prevailed. Under Mr. Berlusconi's patronage, he became foreign minister, then deputy prime minister, and now speaker of the lower house, a more prestigious job than its British equivalent. As Berlusconi's unquestioned number two in the new fused party, he is also his heir apparent. The puri e duri, the hardcore fascist elements, have been gritting their teeth and screaming defiance. One group wanted to stage a ceremony to mark the extinguishing of the flame at the altar of the nation, unquote, the wedding cake-like symbol of Italy that towers over Piazza Venezia in Rome. The city's mayor, ironically himself a lifelong, quote, post-fascist, unquote, bandit. But the puri e duri will not give up. Quote, the National Alliance dies, the right lives, unquote, declares a flyer scattered about by one of the hard right parties whose symbol sports an oversized flame. Today, with the betrayal of our ideas, of our story, and our identity, roars one of their leaders, Teodoro Buontempo, the national president of the right party, we have the duty to make clearer than ever that our party was born to assure the continuity of our ideals. Join us to scream your indignation against a ruling class of trimmers and nobodies, unquote. Black Bands, an investigative book into the hard right by Paolo Berizzi, published in Italy this week, claims at least 150,000 young Italians under 30 live within the cults of fascism and neo-fascism. And not all, but many in the myth of Hitler, unquote. Five tiny registered parties account for 1.8% of the national vote, between 450 and 480,000 voters. These are significant numbers, yet even combined, they are not nearly enough to reach the 4% threshold to break into parliament. By this reading, the fascist element in Italy is no more significant than the BNP in Britain, an embarrassing irritant that can make noise and win insignificant victories, but nothing more. Despite the claims of the loony right to the contrary, the going out of the fascist flame does not mean fascist ideas have disappeared from the Italian political scene. Quite the reverse. 15 years after Mr. Berlusconi brought the neo-fascists in from the cold, their impact on politics has never been more striking, never more disturbing. According to Christopher Duggan, the British author of Force of Destiny, an acclaimed history of modern Italy, the fusion of the two parties does not mark the disappearance of fascist ideas and practices, but rather their triumphant insinuation. Quote, "This is an alarming situation in many, many ways," he says. "The fusion of the party signifies the absorption of the ideas of the post-fascists into Berlusconi's party. The tendency to see no moral and ultimately no political distinction between those who supported the fascist regime and those who supported the resistance. So the fact that fascism was belligerent, racist, and illiberal gets forgotten. There is a quiet chorus of public opinion saying that fascism was not so bad," unquote. One example of the many ways things are changing is the treatment of the veterans of the Republic of Salò, the puppet fascist state ruled by Mussolini on the shores of Lake Garda in the last phase of the war. Under the thumb of Hitler, and responsible for dispatching Jews to the death camps, Salò was seen by Italians after the war as the darkest chapter in the nation's modern history. But steadily and quietly, it has been rehabilitated in the Italian memory. The latest step before Parliament is the creation of a new military order, the Cavalieri di Tricolori, which can be awarded to people who fought for at least 6 months during the war, either with the partisans against the Nazi fascists, unquote, with the forces of the Republic of Salò on behalf of the Nazis and against the partisans, or with the forces in the south under General Badoglio. "In this way," says Duggan, "the idea of moral interchangeability is smuggled into the national discourse, treating the soldiers fighting for the puppet Nazi statelet, quote, on an equal footing morally and politically with the partisans," unquote. Duggan contrasts the post-war process in Italy with that in Germany, where the Nuremberg trials and the purge of public life was supervised by the Allies and produced a new political landscape. Parenthetically, not true. More about that later. Nothing of the sort happened in Italy. There was never a clear public watershed between the experience of fascism and what happened afterwards. It's partly the fault of the Allies, who after the war were much more concerned with preventing the communists from coming to power. As a result, very senior figures in the army, the police, and the judiciary remained unpurged. Take the figure of Gaetano Azzariti, one of the first presidents post-war of Italy's constitutional court, yet under Mussolini, he had been the president of the court which had the job of enforcing the race laws. The failure of the Allies to put pressure on Italy also reflects a perception that still exists, that the fascist revival is not to be taken seriously because Italy is, quote, lightweight, unquote. Whereas if the same thing happened in Germany or Austria, you'd get really worried, unquote. The widespread defiance of the anti-fascist constitution can be seen in the profusion of parties deriving inspiration from Mussolini. In the thousands who poured into Predappio, Mussolini's birthplace, to celebrate his march on Rome on October 20th of every year, in shops and on market stalls doing a lively trade in busts of Il Duce and other fascist mementos of every sort. Far more alarming, Duggan says, is what is happening out of the spotlight to the national temper, where the steady erosion and discrediting of state institutions is playing into the hands of a dictatorial elite, just as it did in the 1920s. Quote, "What is so disturbing is not just the systematic rehabilitation of fascism, but the erosion of every aspect of the state, for example, justice, with the result that people have the urge to throw themselves into the arms of the one man they believe can sort things out. You create very personalized relations with the leader so that in Mussolini's case, he received 2,000 letters a day from people pleading with him to help. If the state doesn't work, you trust in one man to pick up the phone and sort things out. This is how liberalism disappeared in the 1920s with the steady discrediting of Parliament, so that in the end, there was no need for Mussolini to abolish it. He merely ignored it. Something very similar is happening in Italy today. Unquote. Before moving on to the next article, remember that Berlusconi was a member of the P2 Lodge, headed up by Mussolini veteran Licio Gelli. Known as the Puppet Master, it functioned as a crypto-fascist government, basically controlling Italian politics for many, many years. And one of the things that Gelli had formulated was his democratic rebirth strategy of fascism, in which the tools of democracy would be used to effect a rebirth of fascism. Now, we're not seeing that, are we? Nah, I mean, I'm just a crazy conspiracy theorist, and that's not happening in the real world, is it? Of course not. And, by the way, in witness to same, following article from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency of June 15th of 2009, paramilitary guard alarms Italians. The creation of an extreme-right, paramilitary-style vigilante group has triggered an uproar in Italy. A group called the Italian National Guard over the weekend revealed uniforms reminiscent of those from pre-World War II fascist militias and also used symbols linked with fascism such as a black insignia and the imperial eagle. The Guard, dubbed the Black Patrols by critics and the media, was formed with the support of a neo-fascist political movement that models itself on Britain's National Front. With its uniforms, the Guard is reminiscent of the so-called Hungarian Guard formed by Hungary's far-right Jobbik Party. Prosecutors in Milan and Turin have opened investigations on suspicion that the Guard violates a law that bans the reestablishment of the fascist party. Mainstream right-wing politicians joined leftists in condemning the group. That's nice positioning for PR purposes, but as we've just seen, that didn't work. One thing we're not going to have time to go into at any great length, of course, is the profound relationship between the P2 Lodge, of which Berlusconi is a member, and the Vatican. In many programs, such as FTR 377 and 456, we've also gone into the profound links between the Alleanza Nazionale and P2 milieu and that of the fascist Muslim Brotherhood. The Vatican was inextricably linked with the P2, and one of the major fascist influences on the Vatican was the Opus Dei sect, to which the late Pope John Paul II was very closely connected, as well as the real power behind him, who was Cardinal Ratzinger, nicknamed Der Panzer Kardinal now, and better known as Pope Benedict XVI. Although the entire article will be in the description for the show, we have not got time to go into that. But by way of pointing out the major mainstream institutional connections of fascism, one of the reasons why we're seeing its rebirth, the following article is from the GermanForeignPolicy.com website. It's from May 11th of 2009, titled "The Pope and the Anti-Semites," and it deals with the Pope's political rehabilitation of Holocaust deniers, which he then quickly and for PR purposes attempted to reverse. But skipping down, talking about former Cardinal Ratzinger, member of the Hitler Youth, and a fellow with roots basically in the Third Reich, and by the way, for the record, 508 deals with his roots. We read, skipping down, "With the renewed Catholic anti-Semitism in mind, critics point to the orientation of Ratzinger's earlier milieu. For example, the fact that the Pope, today's Pope, quote, owes his career to supporters who were Nazi sympathizers," unquote. Of major significance was Bishop Rudolf Graeber from Regensburg, who toward the end of the 1960s had, quote, "the planned Jewish studies professorship transformed into a professorship for dogma," unquote. Graeber was considered a self-proclaimed anti-Semite. In a pamphlet written in 1933, he asked, quote, "Why should the scorned Israel rather than the folk Dermita, people of the middle, rule the world," unquote. He later opened, quote, "for Ratzinger, the doors to the Habsburgs and Franz Josef Strauss," unquote, or according to the Swiss press. Of course, the Habsburgs, the house that ruled the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Franz Josef Strauss, a top German far-right leader, And the Habsburgs, of course, Carl von Habsburg, head of the UNPO, now married to Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza. The German NDP, which, as we looked at in For the Record program number 669, is still receiving funding from, quote, old Nazis, unquote, in Latin America. We know who that is, of course. That's the Bormann Network, about which I've spoken so often. They, too, are taking advantage of economic crisis. This, too, is from the GermanForeignPolicy.com website. National responses from May 1st of 2009, skipping down, talking about the NPD. Just in time before today's International Workers' Day rally, the NPD has launched a new campaign on the economic crisis, unquote. The party is systematically attempting to exploit the economic collapse to broaden and stabilize its membership. Quote, the months ahead will be marked by reduced hours, mass layoffs, and growing social injustice, unquote, writes the NPD. More and more Germans are becoming aware that it can't go on like this, unquote. And again, they're attempting to use the unemployment and national economic crisis in order to recruit for their own cause. An article that exemplifies the institutional failure of denazification of Germany. Official Nazi symbols were banned, and supporting officially Hitler's stances were banned. But the politicians, the soldiers, and basically everybody else of positions of power, chiefly the industrialists and financiers, were the old Nazis. And there's an article from GermanForeignPolicy.com talking about how the Vertriebene groups are not only once again agitating for the Drang nach Osten, the push to the east, but they are enjoying the support of mainstream German politicos. Now, a word of, well, not a word, but a reminder. The Vertriebene groups are groups that were originally coalesced under the stewardship of the SS. They actually have their own bureau within the German government, the Expellé Bureau. And the Vertriebene groups are basically focused on redressing the economic and territorial recrudescence of the various Germanic minorities that were expelled from Eastern Europe after the close of the military phase of World War II. Note my phrasing there. The Sudeten Germans, the Volksdeutsche in Poland, and other Germanic minorities were forcibly expelled, their property in many cases appropriated, and some of it was quite violent, by people in Eastern Europe after the conclusion of military hostilities. This was done for a reason. The various Germanic minorities were a key element of fifth column agitation by the Third Reich, and in many places, they were the actual excuse for the German Nazi invasion of those countries, basically in order to redress grievances on behalf of those Germanic minorities. Now, the expulsion of many of those Germanic minorities was, I would say, politically justified, although many individuals, as is always the case when mass actions take place, many individuals and groups of individuals were violated from a political and legalistic standpoint. And also at times it got quite rough. Then again, World War II was quite rough as well. And with those brutal injustices in mind, many of the Eastern European citizens who affected the expulsion of their Germanic minorities did so, well, they figured it was time, it was payback time, to make a long story short. But what is worth noting here is that the Vertriebene groups, including the Wittigobund, were formed under the stewardship of the SS. They have their own ministry within the German government, and once again agitating for a push to the east or the Drang nach Osten, they are once again enjoying the support of the German government. The following, once again, is from the GermanForeignPolicy.com website. This is titled Days of Aggression. It's datelined May 29th of the year 2009, and it reads, this weekend, the Sudeten German Homeland Association is celebrating its 60th Sudeten German Day, unquote, with the active participation of prominent politicians and an extreme right-wing organization. This last sentence again, because it pretty much sums up the nexus I'm talking about here. This weekend, the Sudeten German Homeland Association is celebrating its 60th Sudeten German Day, unquote, with the active participation of prominent politicians and an extreme right-wing organization. As always, this mass meeting put on by the Vertriebenen Association in Augsburg, Bavaria, is being billed as a protest against laws with constitutional status in two EU member states, the Beneš decrees of the Czech Republic and Slovakia. The event will be honored with a message of greetings from the German Minister of the Interior. Also present will be the Witegobund, which represents the radically ethnic chauvinist wing of the Sudeten-German Homeland Association, unquote, and maintains contact to right-wing extremists. A functionary of the NPD, the neo-Nazi National Democratic Party of Germany, is a member of the presidium of its youth organization. Notwithstanding, government support for this weekend's event is assured because the German government declares the post-war resettlement of Germans an injustice, unquote, and with the support of the Expelle Association seeks to add emphasis to this opinion. For the same reason, the Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media just recently announced that, quote, the Center Against Expulsions, unquote, Foundation Flight Expulsion and Reconciliation, has begun to function. Berlin is keeping its Eastern European neighbors under pressure with its legal opinion that German resettlement was a, quote, injustice, unquote. With a press conference and a wreath-laying commemoration ceremony, the Sudeten German Homeland Association will open its 60th Sudeten German Day today in Augsburg, Bavaria. Approximately 15,000 are expected to participate in this mass meeting, scheduled to close following the Bavarian Prime Minister Horst Seehofer's keynote address on Sunday. By the way, Seehofer is a member of the CDU. That is the main political party, the Christian Democratic Political Party of Angela Merkel, and he's addressing this organization. Continuing, as always, the event will be centered on the protest against the Beneš decrees of Czechoslovakia, which still have constitutional status in the successor states, the Czech Republic and Slovakia. The Beneš decrees served the reconstruction of the Czechoslovak state in the aftermath of German occupation and laid the groundwork for the expulsion of the Sudetendeutschen or Sudeten Germans, which is the reason why the Homeland Association is still campaigning for their annulment today. The German Minister of Interior is honoring this year's, quote, Sudeten German Day and its protest against the Beneš decrees with a message of official greetings, while the presence of high-ranking Bavarian politicians are ensuring extensive media coverage of the event. As in the past, the Witegobund will also be participating in the Sudeten German Day and has announced the organization of event with speeches and an information stand. The Witegobund was founded in 1948 by former SS and NSDAP party members. NSDAP, by the way, is the German Nazi Party under Hitler. Continuing, it represents the radically ethnic chauvinist wing of the Sudeten Germans and maintains contacts to the extreme right. A former long-standing chairman of the Witegobund was a Republikaner back when the Republikaner Party was the leading party of the German extreme right. Today, the links are to the NPD. Last year, the chairman of the Regensburg County chapter of the NPD, Willy Weiner, was elected vice chairman of the Witego National Youth Organization, Junge Witegonen. This led the mayor of Regensburg, Hans Schledinger of the CSU, to refuse in March to attend the Sudeten German Homeland Association's event. He demanded that they publicly renounce their ties to the Witegobund, and this not forthcoming, stayed away in protest from their event. It is not to be expected that for this weekend's event, similar stands will be taken by Bavarian politicians or the German Minister of the Interior. This is because of German foreign policy interests. Germany insists on its legal interpretation that the post-World War II German resettlement constitutes an injustice. Therefore, events in support of this contention that draw extensive media coverage, such as the Sudeten German Day, are desirable and will be supported by the government. For this same reason, Berlin has been pushing for the reestablishment of a Center Against Expulsions, unquote, over the past 10 years. The Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media announced on May 13th that the Foundation Flight Expulsion Reconciliations Board of Directors has now been constituted. The Center Against Expulsions was also declares that German post-war resettlement was an injustice will be created in Berlin under the same name. Remaining unclear, however, is whether this allegation of German resettlement constituting an injustice opens the door to a lawsuit for restitution or compensation for former property of the resettled. The German government is still trying to keep these claims on the table. In any case, this issue places Germany's eastern neighbors under pressure to the advantage of Berlin's foreign policy. A boycott of these expelle events in protest of the far right appear, therefore, unattractive to power-conscious politicians. The event taking place in Augsburg this weekend will be followed by a similar event in Hanover of Lower Saxony planned for the last weekend in June, June 26th through 28th, this year's, quote, annual meeting of Silesians, unquote. By the way, Silesia was now part of Poland, and Silesia was one of the homes of the Volksdeutsche. Continuing, Christian Wolff of the CDU, the Prime Minister of Lower Saxony, is to present the keynote address. The Vatican's Apostolic Nuncius to Germany will hold Mass. The Silesian Homeland Association came under pressure at last year's Silesian Annual Conference because critics had pointed to its links to the extreme right. These accusations did not hamper the participation of Prime Minister Wolff, nor, I would add, of the Vatican's Apostolic Nuncius to Germany. Continuing, before Wolff had delivered his speech, journalists had discovered such slogans on posters in the hall as, Silesia is not in Poland, the truth will set you free, unquote. Given such slogans, the extreme right's participation can also be expected this year. The chairman of the Silesian Homeland Association, who will give his speech at the annual conference after Wolff, is also a leading activist of the Prussian Trust, an organization filing numerous claims against Poland for the return of property that had belonged to expelle. The Silesian Youth, the official youth organization of the Homeland Association, is a forum also for extremist forces who partially put the German Constitution into question, unquote, according to some of its former members. The Silesian Youth has also been invited to Hanover. The events in Augsburg and Hanover show a similar political constellation. Officials at the highest state levels join with activists of the extreme right in favor of an aggressive foreign policy against Germany's eastern neighbors. And I would point out that it is a continuity of political and foreign policy from the Hitler period right through to the present. Now, I've made reference to many things during the course of the broadcast, the P2 Lodge, Silvio Berlusconi, the Vertrebina groups. I can appreciate that particularly for newer and or younger listeners, this is quite a tall drink to down at one sitting. That's why the SpitfireList.com website exists. It is the best source of information for this source of information. It is the best source for this kind of information in the world, if I do say so myself. It is massive, but there's an entire mini library of anti-fascist books available. There basically is everything I've ever done. All of my recorded work is available for download for free. Another library, and not a mini library at all, of long article length descriptions for the various programs. Please use the website spitfirelist.com. Again, everything I've ever done available for download for free. And if you don't like what you're seeing and would like to do something about it, there's also a page to click on so that you can support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you're seeing, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. My name is Dave Emery. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 677, Update on Global Fascism. This program has been recorded on June 20th of 2009. Thanks for listening.